Welcome, friend. I'm number 6.
I'm number 15. What number are you?
I am not a number. I am a man. And don't you ever... Oh, wait. I'm number 5. In your face, number 6.
Catapult the propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our lovely wintry bunker.
It is a blustery and cold day here in mid-Missouri. We're going down to 6 degrees tonight, but at least the snow stopped.
Well, maybe 3 degrees, actually. I think it all depends on, you know. Who you ask.
Well, 6 degrees. I haven't seen Kevin Bacon around, so I think we're okay there. No, we got every bit of the snow that was predicted for us, probably a little more. They were saying 10 to 14 inches when we went to bed on Thursday night, and by Friday morning, it looked like it was more like 18 to 20.
Oh, I know. You know, I put down that we got 14, but I think we probably got more than that. And I only did that because I was trying to be conservative, being the paleo-conservative that I am, and trying to err on the side of caution. A lot of the people around here were saying they got 12 inches. Well, you know what? It really looked almost close like 2 feet if you looked at some of the places. And I understand we got some drifts, but overall, I think you're close on it with the 18 inches or so.
Yeah, and the emergency managers here in Columbia, which kept us in real good contact, I have a benefit because I'm on the mailing list whenever they send out email through my connection with the radio station. Mm-hmm. So
you're connected.
Yes. Emergency managers for Boone County and the Columbia area here in mid-Missouri have really been fighting a battle. They were asking, even until today, Sunday afternoon, which is December the 3rd of 2006, that even though the storm passed through here Friday morning, they were still asking people as of Sunday afternoon to stay off the roads unless absolutely necessary. Mm-hmm. Saturday afternoon, they were still telling people, stay home, do not attempt to travel.
Yep.
They were running into problems with people who had gotten stuck while trying to run to the store to pick up supplies that they should have picked up Wednesday.
Yeah.
They were getting in the way of plows and backhoes that were trying to clear the roads. There was a serious accident just east of Columbia Saturday afternoon because a semi-tractor trailer slowed down for a car that had spun out in front of it, and a pickup truck behind it couldn't stop, slammed into the back of the semi-tractor trailer, and the driver of that pickup is now in serious condition at one of our hospitals. But we're fine.
We're just snowed in. We've hardly gone anywhere for 3 days.
Yeah. I went out today to take care of some problems at the radio station, and getting out was a little bit of a challenge. Our apartment complex has a bit of a hill getting up to the main road.
A bit of a hill is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pretty steep hill.
Right. And they did some plowing, which got most of the snow, you know, piled up. I mean, we're looking at now just a crust of maybe 2 inches on the parking lot here, but because it has been sunny the last 2 days now, it's melted and refrozen. And when I came back from the radio station this afternoon, somebody had decided to bring a moving truck down that slope into the main parking lot, and I don't think that truck is getting back out. So I parked up at the top of the hill up by the office. I'm going to walk
the quarter mile
up there. Well, you know, growing up in Chicago, you learn a few things. And, you know, I'm sure in Indiana you saw snow like this.
Oh, so many times.
We've got
and
a lot
in
of
Nebraska.
Right.
And Iowa. I've moved a lot.
So, and we've got a lot of folks in the Columbia area who are in here because they came to the university from someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And to be fair, Central Missouri's not had a storm like this since 1995. It was the last time we had a snowfall of greater than 12 inches. So it's been a while since they've had to deal with this, but a lot of the people who are here are not accustomed to this because they come from places where it's warmer, and so, you know, they didn't anticipate the problem.
Well, add to that, you and I have seen this. I would say most of the people living in this apartment complex are students.
Right.
They may be graduate students, but they're still students.
Right.
I see an awful lot of people during the day and the evenings coming out of their cars with little paper bags.
Mm-hmm.
And they're clearly eating out a lot. And you and I, we hardly ever eat out. And it's scary when you're accustomed to drive-through food and suddenly you can't drive.
This is a little bit of a test, I guess, a very small test of what it may be like someday mm-hmm. when things really get bad, whether it be to a pandemic, mm-hmm. influenza, or some sort of terror attack where Homeland Security raises the threat level to red and you can't travel.
You know, and the word is not if. It's when. It is coming. We've been saying that for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we've talked many times about how, you know, the emergency pantry that we had in our old bunker back in St. Louis.
Right.
We have a tiny bunker now, so we can't really keep much. But I'll tell you what, we make use of every mm-hmm. space. If you can stuff it underneath your bed, if you have extra space in the bottom of your closet where shoes might normally be, we keep lots of food wherever we can stuff it. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of things that we were able to bring from our bunker. Mm-hmm. Here's something that amazes me. You at your radio station, the mm-hmm. Zimmer Radio Group, which is actually a suite of, what, 8 stations?
9 in Central Missouri, 5 in Columbia, 4 in Jefferson City, 2 in Fulton.
Well, the ones here in Columbia have been sponsoring a tailgate mm-hmm. party before the home games,
Football games, right.
You guys have leftover food. Mm-hmm. It amazes me how very few people take advantage of the leftover gallons of water that are left at your station. And the thing is that anybody can take them.
Mm-hmm. What they do is they bring it back to the station, leave it for a day or so. And most of the stuff that's left over is, you know, hot dog buns, hamburger buns, potato chips, stuff like that.
The barbecue potato chips go first.
Yes. Yeah, we've noticed that. The meat that's left over goes to a food pantry right away.
And after
a couple of days, the leftover chips and buns and stuff go to a pantry. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the gallon containers of drinking water, which we just use for people who don't want mm-hmm. soda and don't want to drink beer, we just had gallons and gallons stacking up in the back kitchen. So I just took a whole bunch of gallons home Wednesday mm-hmm. night. So we've got, well, probably, you know, 12 gallons of drinking water.
Well, you need that. It's really easy to go through water very fast. And if for some reason during the storm, we had lost our water,
mm-hmm.
what are you going to do?
Yeah, melt the snow? Huh, not in a pet-friendly complex, you don't.
Not even in a non-pet. When I was a kid, we had snow cream a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that anymore. There are so many particulates in the snow. You don't dare eat that snow.
Yep. So all is well here. Thankfully, there were relatively few injuries around the area. I think that even though people went to bed Thursday night, and I confess to being guilty of this, assuming that the weather forecasters had overstated the case, which they usually do, they didn't undersell it or oversell it at all. It was right on the money. Their forecasts were 10 to 14 inches. If anything, they might have been a couple inches shy, but they warned everybody, and anyone who was caught unawares had no one to blame but themselves.
That's true.
We really had to scramble at the radio station Friday morning. We got 2 of our 4 morning teams made it in. And, well, half of ours, because our news director was smart enough to take the station up on an offer of a free hotel room at the hotel next door.
Mm-hmm.
The other guys were all too manly.
You know, one guy didn't take him up on it. Justin may not have been offered it.
No, he wasn't.
Because he lives very close. He lives as close as we do. But you know what? We couldn't have driven 2 feet.
No.
Much less the mile it takes to get up to the
station. We'd have been stuck in the lot here.
But he walked.
He lives about a mile from the station, just as we do. I was debating walking, and I'm glad Sharon persuaded me against that.
No, and it has nothing to do with, I mean, granted, Justin is younger than you are.
Right.
I suppose to a certain degree that's a factor. But primarily it was you didn't have the proper attire.
No, the proper gear. Justin goes hunting with his folks a lot. He goes hunting with his dad, his grandpa, his uncles. And he's used to sitting in weather this cold, 5-degree, 10-degree mm-hmm. weather, in a deer stand for hours on end. Mm-hmm. So he's got the gear, and he walked into the radio station.
And this is heavy, wet snow, and it was up to your knees.
Yeah. And he trudged into the station, and that young man basically saved our bacon by keeping the station.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the computer controls most of it, but what he was able to do by being there was present information to people in a timely manner.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I was able to do here from home was take those press releases and news information that we were getting from the emergency managers and post them to the website and send them out by email to our core listeners. So
you know, it's the other side of what you and I have been talking about for the last year and a half, going on 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Quayle and many other people talk about it, too.
Right.
You have to be ready for the inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those things is to have a radio that you can listen to emergency broadcasts on. And that's fine, but who's going to broadcast
to you? Who's going to broadcast to you?
It was a real test.
Yep.
And I just pray that you don't have to get tested in a more severe manner. But I'd say that there's a good chance that you will. So this right. was a good practice run.
Well, and, you know, we're just taking this opportunity to just share with you what we went through. And again, it's a relatively minor test as these things go, mm-hmm. because the Bible tells us that things are going to get much worse. And, would, you know, just take this as early warning that, you need to have non-perishables, some drinking water, other supplies, you know, what you can. Mm-hmm. And it's not so that you can, you know, bar the door and have things while your neighbors are suffering. It's so that you can share and show the love of Christ when times get hard and suddenly neighbors mm-hmm. are panicking. What are we going to do? We don't have any water.
Right.
Hey, you know, we've got some extra. We'll share with you.
Exactly.
And that may open the door to, you know, it may lead to questions like, why are you doing this? You know, that sort of thing.
It may do that. Which, it may not. Yeah. But it's the thing that Christ would do. And so yeah. that's what you have to do.
Right.
Well, we're grateful to you who listened to our best of sort of broadcast last Sunday.
Hope you enjoyed that. That
yeah.
was splicing it together, you know, and hearing it all in one chunk was really
eye-opening. And I think we're going to do more of that occasionally. Mm-hmm. There are some Sundays because weekends are becoming more and more precious to us. Time spent mm-hmm. with Nicole, time driving, things like that. There may be the occasional Sunday that we simply can't do the show, and we've got lots of wonderful archives. So mm-hmm. Derek's probably going to have to put together another show or two, and we just pray that you enjoyed that.
Yeah,
and it was timely. You know, we had just passed the anniversary of John F. Kennedy's assassination.
Right, so that worked out well. It was Eric John Phelps talking about the involvement of the Jesuits in the murder of John F. Kennedy. Interesting, I got an email from the list master of the American Patriot Friends Network, APFN.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Said he'd not heard that theory before. He copied Eric John Phelps on that. So at least there were a couple people out there who'd not heard that before, and we were glad to do that. As long as we're speaking of assassinations, why don't we take up the thread of an assassination that's really been in the news for the last week, and we're scratching our heads.
Alexander Litvinenko.
We're scratching yeah. our heads and wondering why.
You know, I still haven't quite figured it out, but the more I look into it, the more I am convinced it is not Russia.
I agree with you there. Alexander Litvinenko, if you've not followed the story, was a former member of the FSB, which is the successor organization to the KGB. It's their mm-hmm. spy agency.
Yeah, it's like the FBI.
Uh-huh. He defected to Britain some years back.
I guess the CIA, actually.
And he has been rather outspoken in his criticism of Vladimir Putin.
Mm-hmm.
And as you may have heard, on November 1st, he was eating at a sushi restaurant. He took ill shortly thereafter. It became obvious very quickly that he'd been poisoned. It's been determined that it was polonium-210 was the agent with which he was poisoned. It was a slow, agonizing death. Radiation poisoning is not pretty. And during the 2 or 3 weeks that it took for him to fail, he was very outspoken in his accusations, accusing Vladimir Putin of ordering the hit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our thoughts are these. If Russia truly
wanted to... Well, first of all, let me say this. You and I, nor do our listeners, know for sure mm-hmm. that that is what Litvinenko said.
True. All we know is that that's what was reported. Right.
That he said.
And we have to bear that in mind. And that is a theme that we have to come back to very often. All we know mm-hmm. is what has been reported by media, and we have to remember that it's always mm-hmm. filtered. Litvinenko was allowed a good long while to point fingers and make accusations if the reports of what he'd said while he was in the hospital are true. Now, if Russia really wanted to silence a critic, why, with all the resources and experience that Russia's intelligence services have, would they select a poison that would allow somebody so much time to make accusations
and
share evidence with
exactly.
the media?
Exactly, and a means of death that is so public.
Right.
That is going to raise huge red flags.
Horrify people. Oh, you've seen the pictures of mm-hmm. Litvinenko from his hospital bed. His hair has fallen out. He looks pale, drawn. He's obviously in pain compared to the picture of him in the prime mm-hmm. of health. It's a shocking contrast. But let's face it. If Russia had really wanted to silence this guy, they could have done so in a way where he just disappeared.
In a very quiet way. And
because,
it would have, because we know, I would say 90%, maybe even more, of media sources are owned by very few people.
Right.
So if he had just quietly disappeared, there might have been a headline or two, but mm-hmm. the story would have disappeared as well. For some reason, the media is just blowing this up.
Right. And that's the thing we can't figure out, because although Litvinenko wrote a book some years ago in which he made some pretty startling accusations, he accused Putin of being responsible for the bombing of some apartment blocks in Moscow just before he was elected, sort of as the law and order candidate back in, what was it, 94 or 92?
1999.
Okay. So.
Yeah, he came in a little earlier than that because Yeltsin resigned.
Right, right. But despite those accusations, let's face it, nobody knew who Alexander Litvinenko was before this happened.
No, pretty much not. There are a lot of things about his life that I think really are have huge question marks over them. One of them is that he accused the FSB of trying to assassinate Boris Berezovsky, who was at the time, I think it was like an under deputy secretary of security. And he was fired eventually because it was revealed or learned or both that he was an Israeli citizen.
Interesting.
Boris Berezovsky is Jewish by birth. And it's hard to find, but if you do some real digging on the internet, you can find sources that, in fact, there was one of them was in a lawsuit. My brain isn't quite connecting, and I don't. For some reason, the website isn't connecting either. I'm trying to do a search on Watcher Magazine, and it's not going there. Anyway, Boris Berezovsky is a multi-billionaire who, well, he happened to defect from Russia, and he's the one who published Litvinenko's book. Now, Litvinenko was, I think it was in 1999, he was arrested for dereliction of duty. And he was told that he would be prosecuted for that, but then he was released.
Okay.
And as soon as he was released, okay, you go, but don't you run away because we're going to prosecute you. You stay exactly where you are. We're going to string you up. Of course he took off.
Yeah, yeah. And if you do a little digging into his background, he's been portrayed by some mainstream publications like Forbes as being basically a mafia boss.
He has been portrayed as being a defector, of being a double agent, of being a triple agent. In other words, he represents three different factions.
Which is really interesting. This guy is really an interesting character. We're only scratching the surface of this guy, Berezovsky.
Well, he got an email, supposedly, from someone calling himself Mario from Italy. And we know now that Mario is Mario Scaramella, who is supposed to be an academic who teaches at, oh gosh, I can't remember, Principia? I can't remember the name of the school in Italy. And he is that, but he also is very much involved in looking at nuclear weapons as a means of terrorism. He's a so-called expert on that.
Okay.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
He happened to be the one who met with Litvinenko at Itso Sushi House the day he was poisoned.
One of the other interesting connections that Berezovsky, you know, one of the dots we have to bring in here is the fact that Berezovsky is a major investor in an educational software company called Ignite.
Ignite. Yeah, I've got an article right now on my website that I don't think it's the top one now, but we'll link to it.
Yeah, and it is Berezovsky. Well, Ignite is owned by Neil Bush.
Yes.
Yeah, President Bush's brother. And Bush, in fact, went to Latvia and met with Berezovsky just last year, 2005.
He also sits in Berezovsky's box in Dubai at soccer games.
And that's a really interesting connection because some of the other investors in Neil Bush's company are real interesting people, like Sun Myung Moon of the Unification Church, who also owns United Press International and the Washington Times. Mm-hmm. So you see what we're saying here about these being relatively small groups of men that operate at the very top levels of government. And, you know, getting back to Litvinenko, who benefits? I guess that's the question. Cui bono? Who benefits from Litvinenko's death? Well, surely not Russia, because the fingers seem to be pointing at them, except inside Russia, where the media there are running stories blaming his death on the CIA.
Yes, they're blaming it on the CIA and Israel. Now, I'm not so sure that the connection to either one of those is completely wrong. If you look at the players involved, because some of the players involved are related. If you look at Berezovsky, who is an Israeli citizen, who has been very much involved in the Diaspora Museum and other so-called Zionist organizations. If the connection of Berezovsky as culpability is made, then perhaps there is a reason to say the Mossad may have been involved. And I can almost guarantee you if the Mossad is involved, that in some way you might find a CIA person there.
Hmm.
They're hand in glove.
The interesting thing here, one of the many interesting things, as you mentioned, Berezovsky's dual citizenship and the fact that he might have fallen out of favor with Vladimir Putin because mm-hmm. of his divided loyalties, you know, having somebody with a citizenship in a foreign nation serving in the security services of Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it interesting that the United States is currently entrusting its Department of Homeland Security to a man who holds dual citizenship with the United States mm-hmm. and Israel?
Mm-hmm. Chertoff.
Yeah, Michael Chertoff is a dual citizen, as are many others in the United States. But
and again,
an interesting
point.
We
want to just stress that this has nothing to do with people of Jewish faith or Jewish mm-hmm. origin. This has to do with a political bent called Zionism.
And right.
It has nothing to do with trying to get everybody back to Israel, the homeland. It has to do with a political... I'm at a loss for word. Ideology that is just... Frankly, I think it's just really evil.
Theopolitical. How's that?
You know, I like that. That is theopolitical. And
we've been tossing around.
Kind of, it's almost like dominionism.
Yeah. And we've been tossing around various terms for what it is we do here on this program. Sharon came up with crypto-political or crypto-geopolitical. Theopolitical might be closer.
Crypto-geo-theopolitical.
Yeah. We need to come up with...
Can you say that four times fast?
No. But we need to come up with some sort of term that fits what we do. Paleoconservatives is pretty good, pretty accurate.
Well, Gilbertarians for sure.
Yeah,
but
Gilbertarians.
We think they are paleoconservatives.
Yeah. The other interesting thing about this story, and I am really surprised that the media. Well, no, I'm not. Let me put it this way. I think it's interesting to note what the media is not reporting about the substance used to poison Alexander Litvinenko, which is polonium-210.
Oh, this is why I called my article polonium-210.
Yeah. Even today. In the stories that are coming out about this, we keep seeing reports about polonium-210 and how difficult it is to obtain and how deadly poisonous it is. And it is that.
And how hard it is to get.
And how hard it is to get.
They said you almost have to get it from a nuclear reactor.
Even Wayne Madsen, who has former NSA, he's got mm-hmm. some pretty good connections on the inside. In his article about this was suggesting that the fact that polonium was used might point to a connection in Poland. That the Poles might be involved in this because they're upset by a gas deal taking place between Germany and Russia mm-hmm. that's bypassing Poland. Well, polonium-210 is the active agent used in air ionizers,
mm-hmm.
which are present in most, I would think, most decent science laboratories, especially those dealing with electronics, where you cannot have a static charge in the air.
Exactly.
Polonium-210 emits alpha particles, and it is thus used to neutralize the charge in air.
Right, and alpha usually, particles can't really get through your skin unless
right.
you have a break in the skin.
Right.
But even that, they're shielded inside these devices.
Right.
And if you have a device and you know what you're doing, I suppose you could break into it.
Uh-huh. Take out the guts and grind it up and drop it in someone's sushi
mm-hmm.
or tea or whatever. But that's the point. You don't need a special – you don't need to be a member of the CIA, MI6, or the FSB in order to get your hands on polonium-210. All you need to do is go to the internet, look up ionizer and order one. Mm-hmm. Or if you happen to have a telescope or a good set of binoculars that you use for watching the skies at night, you can buy anti-static brushes that keep the dust off your lenses.
Mm-hmm.
And they contain polonium-210.
I used to have one of those back in Bloomington. There were
right.
a lot of medical equipment
sure.
that I used that had lenses that I had to clean with those.
Because you don't want to rub cloth across it because you mm-hmm. might scratch the lenses. You use these very fine brushes that are charged with this polonium-210.
Right.
And again, the alpha particles only penetrate like 40 microns deep, and the dead layer of epidermis on top of your skin is something like 200 to 240 mm-hmm. microns thick. So, you know, it's safe to use even without gloves. As long as you don't ingest it, inhale it, or mm-hmm. eat it. So,
but if you have it on your hands and you ever wipe your nose.
Right. Problems. But that's the point. This stories that we keep hearing about how difficult this might be to obtain, is, as Sharon said,
irresponsible.
Irresponsible.
I found it within minutes
sloppy
after
journalism.
I heard it.
Sloppy journalism.
Yeah.
So, and the point.
Or intentionally.
Or And that's the key. And that's why I said I wasn't surprised to see that this is coming out, because it doesn't make sense if Russia really wanted to do away with Litvinenko.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, do you know who owns a lot of the media in Russia?
Who's that?
Boris Berezovsky.
He really?
Owns Kommersant.
Kommersant is the site that we go to for a lot of news out of Russia.
Yeah, he owned Russia's Channel 6 at one time. He may not own it now.
Yeah.
And I think he owned Russia 1 at one time.
Huh. Well, that's interesting. I wonder if that would still be under his control, or if they have been taken away from him, just like Yukos Oil has been taken away from his buddy, Mikhail Khodorkovsky.
I don't know. That's a good question. I know at one time he also owned Aeroflot. Which I think is one of the air services.
Yeah. There. What we saw in Russia, essentially, after the breakup of Yeltsin, was not freedom and capitalism taking over. What you saw was the looting of Russia's assets by robber barons, oligarchs, mm-hmm. mob bosses, if you will. And what Putin is doing is bringing them to heel. Now, I'm not saying that that's a good thing, because I certainly would like more freedom than what is allowed under Putin's rule mm-hmm. in Russia, but he is what we're seeing. It appears to me is a struggle between Western oligarchs. I mean, and I think it's significant that one of Mikhail Khodorkovsky, the former head of Yukos Oil, which was Russia's biggest oil company until Putin took it back, Khodorkovsky's best buddy was Baron Rothschild.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're seeing is a struggle between Putin and
who's also been photographed with
Arnie Schwarzenegger.
Yep.
Yeah. What we're seeing is a struggle
and
between
Kevin Bacon.
It is 6 degrees here at Columbia tonight. A struggle between Western oligarchs and the old guard Russians like Putin, who want to keep everything under mm-hmm. the control of Mother Russia, the central government.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think, is part of the struggle. The Litvinenko case.
Well, let me tell you, here's another very simple theory, and I think it goes back to Berezovsky and also anybody else that he's working with in the oligarchy. The notion of trying to put Putin in his place. He is becoming the energy czar, and he wants to continue that over into Europe. He wants to also be the European czar of energy. And I don't think that they like that. I think the UK is pretty cheesed about it.
I can see why they'd be upset. And, of course, Ukraine is not very happy about it. They had their squabbles last year.
No, look what he did last year as far as Gazprom. He was constantly raising the prices, tripling the prices, quadrupling the prices.
Shut the gas off.
Shut it off.
Yeah. And the same will hold true in Georgia this year.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia is going to be, I think, dealing with his energy diplomacy. So we'll see how that all plays out. The Litvinenko story is one that has been in the media for a reason, and we're still trying to figure out what that reason is. But it's our guess at this point, our working theory, that it's to embarrass Russia and mm-hmm. specifically Vladimir Putin.
You know, there was a story at Most News, it's mostnews.com, mm-hmm. about, and it was the kind of story that you would see at Pravda, but it was about the crash of a UFO in Siberia. Now, this is supposedly a genuine story. Something crashed and caused a forest fire. So it was probably not a spaceship.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it?
Good question. Good question. I know that we've not reported any aircraft missing as far as I know. But
no.
Something crashed and caused a forest fire in Siberia. What was it? We're still waiting to find out.
Yeah, so if you know anything, let us know. We'd like to know more about that story.
Another interesting story that Sharon has posted to Watcher Magazine, which requires reading between the lines, which is what we try to do, so you don't have to.
That's right. There's lots of white space there that we can, we read white space.
That's right. Pfizer, which had a rough week last week. Pfizer, which, of course, has been flying high ever since they introduced Viagra into the market.
They had a rough week, but their stock went up.
Yeah, but analysts say that because of the news that came out over the weekend with this torcepatrib, mm-hmm. which is the drug that's supposed to raise your good cholesterol, because of that news that it was causing death, and they immediately they're withdrawing it from the market, the tests have failed, and this was the one that they were going to pin their hopes on to be like the next Lipitor.
Supposedly.
Stock prices, according to analysts, could fall for Pfizer as much as 5 to 25% on Monday. So what are they going to do? Well, they're going to give away AIDS drugs to needy countries in Africa. Mm-hmm. Sounds like a great
30 countries.
A great plan.
Get free drugs. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's great.
Yep. There's more here than meets the eye.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen the movie The Constant Gardener?
Thank you, Daniel, for pointing that out to us. Mm-hmm. One of our constant supporters and friends, Daniel E., has pointed that out to us. And if you haven't seen The Constant Gardener, please watch it. It is an eye-opener, and it is why we, you know, Sharon, flagged this story right away. In 1996, Pfizer treated an outbreak of juvenile meningitis with a trial drug called Trovan, which had not yet been approved for use in the United States. So was this genuinely a humanitarian gesture, or was this just a way of conducting a human trials without having to abide by the same protocols mm-hmm. that they would here in the U.S.?
Well, we know now that they were sneaking and they just wanted to get around the strict rules that we have through the FDA here about protocols.
Uh-huh.
We do know that the FDA has not yet approved their new HIV drug
mm-hmm.
for use in people with HIV.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So they need a large cohort of people with HIV.
And where do you find them? In sub-Saharan Africa, where the scourge of HIV and AIDS has lowered the average lifespan in some places like Malawi to under 40 years.
There are so many babies that are born with this, and they die before they're mm-hmm. 2 years old usually.
Yeah. Well, Pfizer said it hopes to enroll patients in this program during the first quarter of 2007. Again, this announcement, which was made Friday, pleased analysts and investors and did cause their stock prices to increase. Now, of course, that's going to be offset by this announcement of torcepatrib.
Mm-hmm.
But what it appears to us, it appears to us that this trial in Africa is that. It's going to be a way to test out and...
It's a group of people that I honestly think are considered expendable.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know what? They're probably going to die anyway.
Right,
so,
right. And if the drug doesn't work, if the drug doesn't work,
works,
well,
hey, we'll make zillions.
Right. And we come across, and Pfizer then benefits from the public relations goodwill that it generates mm-hmm. by being willing to donate.
You know, I'll never get a job working
donate.
For a pharmaceutical company. I'm always slamming them. It's because I will be one of the first people to tell you that there are medicines out there that are lifesavers. There is no doubt about that.
Yep.
And I know they have to go through testing. But I don't believe that pharmaceutical companies are, by and large, out there to make you and me well.
No.
They're out there to make themselves rich.
Yeah, and we can see that with the proliferation of ads on television. Like, there's a new disease that comes out every month. There's a new acronym being thrown at us every month. Yeah. You know, RLS, restless leg syndrome. Gasp, there's a drug for that.
Okay, now I know you actually that really is a symptom. But the thing is that many of these things are symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
When you hear syndrome, that means that it's a set of symptoms that they don't really know the cause.
Mm-hmm.
I have one of those, fibromyalgia syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really know the cause, and it may be genetic. They don't know that for sure. It may have to do with actual trauma. You know, there are a lot of fibro patients that have been in car wrecks. I've been in a number.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a bad driver. People just hit me. They're always hitting me. Well, and then there was that one icy hill. But anyway.
Forces at work to try to take you out.
You know what? I've nearly been taken out a number of times, and I am still here. But there are a lot of things that just don't have, they don't know the cause. So I think restless leg falls in there. But the problem is that they, rather than try to find the cause, mm-hmm. and it's often nutritional.
Right.
They would rather, instead of saying, go out and eat more green vegetables, they mm-hmm. would say to you, here, take this pill.
Right.
And that's one of the things about the drug that Pfizer just had to take off the market that I think is so fishy, because they've already got Lipitor.
Mm-hmm.
And they want something else that is going to, I would bet that they just add it. Instead of saying, take this instead of Lipitor, no, take this plus Lipitor.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And there are other drugs that work in place of Lipitor, mm-hmm. Like Zocor, I believe. Mm-hmm. But those drugs basically were to reduce cholesterol, serum cholesterol in the blood. And this new drug was intended to increase good cholesterol. Mm-hmm. So you're right. So it was like, you know, let's not look at your diet and your exercise regimen. Mm-hmm. Let's look at how we can medicate your system into balance.
That's really what it is. They just want to make money off of us.
Yeah.
And the more medication you take, the more side effects you have. And sometimes those side effects require more medication.
Yeah.
So it's a bad, bad side effect.
Well, and the cozy relationship between the drug companies and the FDA and the National Health NHS is what I'm trying to think of. National Health
Institutes of Health.
NIH. I'm sorry. Yeah, NIH and the Department of Health and the Human Services.
You haven't had nearly enough cookies today.
No, cookies and coffee. We've been 2 days without coffee.
We have been three days. I've been 3 days without coffee.
Yes.
You had a little bit of coffee. That's the one thing we didn't have filled in the bunker.
Yes.
Our coffee.
Well, it was my own fault. I was at the Walmart and I looked at the coffee and I turned up my nose at the store brand coffee that was there.
So what are we going to drink tomorrow?
Yeah, store brand coffee.
Well, you know, you take what you have. You can.
I lost my train of thought. Again, instead of looking at diet and exercise, the cozy relationship between all of these groups means that they can get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we know for a fact that there have been instances where doctors have been invited to, say a week long, conference, quote unquote, in Hawaii to get together and essentially write up a description of a new syndrome or treatment that fits the description for a drug that a drug mm-hmm. company wants to put out there.
Tell you what, the perks that drug companies give to graduating doctors and to, just physicians in practice. Oh, it's not bribery, is it? But yes, it is.
Well, it's the same principle as paying a program director to play a specific record.
Payola. But they don't call it that. They just call it promotion.
Mm-hmm. Marketing fees. Mm-hmm. Well, that is something that we'll keep an eye on. And in the first quarter of 2007, as Pfizer begins to distribute its free HIV drugs in the poor regions of sub-Saharan Africa.
Hey, do you have a cell phone on you today?
We've got one right over there.
There's one right over here, so that means the FBI is probably listening to us.
Oh, no.
And the phone doesn't even have to be turned on.
That's the thing that really surprised me. And again, thank you to Daniel for forwarding this article to us. You're right, Daniel. We are going to make hay with this.
He said the conspiracy theorists would make hay, but you know what? You don't have to be a conspiracy theorist to realize that the technology is there.
Well, the CNET News reported on this, that the microphone in cell phones can apparently be used to can be remotely activated by the FBI, apparently, to mm-hmm. listen in on conversations. They've done this in a couple of cases involving organized crime in New York. And the key thing is that you don't, as Sharon said, the cell phone doesn't even need to be turned on for this to work, apparently. This is like something out of, Minority Report or, like science fiction. If you just have something with a microphone attached to it, like these headsets we're wearing.
I know. I love our government.
Our leader.
Leader is. No.
Leader. a Simpsons reference for you. This was. This came out in a recent court case and an opinion published in U.S. District Court. Judge Lewis Kaplan ruled that the roving bug used by the FBI was legal because federal wiretaping laws are broad enough to permit eavesdropping even of conversations that have taken place near a suspect's cell phone. And the stuff recorded off the cell phones was apparently legal because it was determined that other means of getting the information the government needed to make its case mm-hmm. would probably not have worked.
Yeah, lest we haven't made this clear, they're not eavesdropping on your conversation on your phone.
Right.
When you're calling your friend or your husband or your loved one or your boss, they are eavesdropping on anything picked up in the vicinity of your phone, whether you are on it or not, whether it's on or not.
Right. Again, the FBI has apparently perfected a technique by which it can remotely activate the microphone in a cell phone, even if the cell phone is not active.
At which I raise my hand and say,
yes,
OnStar.
Yes. And that is something I wanted to ask you about. OnStar is being actively marketed and I think very successfully marketed through a series of campaigns on radio and TV in which they mm-hmm. play actual calls to OnStar featuring people who were in accidents.
It's compelling, I'll
yes,
tell you what.
Yes, it really is. Now, what happened that one time when you were driving in sister's Cadillac?
Faye's new car. Mm-hmm. It's a spiffy new car and she was very proud of it.
General Motors product.
Yep. Yeah, she should be proud of it. We were headed to Hanover. No, past Hanover.
Mm-hmm.
We were heading over to Marty and Bill's, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we had approached this one intersection. We were on Route 62. And what was it she needed? I can't even remember why she called. There was a noise in the car.
Okay.
I think that's what it was. But anyway, she pushed the OnStar button, and it was the first time she'd ever done it.
Mm-hmm.
And this very nice young man's voice came on and said, "Yes, Mrs. So-and-so, may I help you?" Well, he had the wrong name.
Oh, well, she purchased the car used.
She had purchased the car used. And she said, "Well, I just bought this car. I'm so-and-so." And he said, "Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I do have that information, Mrs. Russell."
Mm-hmm.
"And what can I do for you ladies today?"
Ladies, plural.
Yes. And I laughed and looked at Faye, and she said, "How do you know we're ladies?" And he says, "How do you know ladies?" And he said, "Well, there are three of you, right? Two in the front and one in the back."
Uh-huh.
And I said, "How do you know that?" And he said, "Well, I can tell you it's raining where you are, too."
Interesting. Now, that I suppose he could pick up from, he'd have to get from GPS your location.
I think he could have gotten that. But my assumption is that there's a camera in OnStar in addition to a microphone and a cell phone, because you actually use it as a cell phone as well. I don't know how you could determine that there was a woman in the back seat and two women in the front.
Right.
Because, you could even say, okay, it's weight sensitive, that the seats can tell that there's someone
sitting
there.
Sure, but that wouldn't tell you.
You could have a box of groceries in the back.
Exactly, that's right.
He doesn't know the difference. So he knew that there were three women in the car.
Yeah.
Two in the front, one in the back, and he was right. And he was right. It was raining.
Uh-huh.
And he told us what route we were on, and we were getting ready to turn. Now, I can understand that GPS would tell him on a map where we are.
Right. And he could find out from radar.
And he might even find out the conditions of the road.
Right.
There's no way he could have known who was in the car.
That's exactly right. And this case makes clear that with the microphone in that car, law enforcement, FBI in particular, but possibly local law enforcement as well, may have the means to activate the microphone and listen in on conversations taking
place. Well, FBI has used that microphone to listen in on conversations, and they were sued by OnStar. OnStar was very upset about it, supposedly.
Well, but they were listening to conversations.
Yes.
To actual calls.
Yes.
But
they were
this
also
case,
listening to conversations.
Okay. All right. I misread that article. But
maybe I'm wrong.
But the fact is that they can do it.
And the FBI was told that really you're not supposed to be doing certain things, but the things you've been doing have been out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they always play by the rules, don't they?
Yeah,
so
right.
So if a judge tells them not to do something, I know they won't do it. Let me just, from another article, let me skip to it. This is connected, folks. There's it's a top story on Watcher right now about Dick Cheney. He said the following. Let me find it here. He says that presidents have vast inherent powers not spelled out in the Constitution that allow them to defy Congress. Now, if this administration believes that the president has such powers with regard to eavesdropping and flaunting certain laws, this was with regard to, he made this statement with regard to Iran-Contra.
Mm-hmm.
This was back in the Reagan administration. He, I'm sure, represents the belief that the ends justify the means.
Yeah, that the president should not have his hands tied, because the world is different than back in the day when the Constitution was written. So in order to respond properly to the threats posed by global terror or what have you. But Cheney, again, was making this case when? In the
80s,
wasn't
it? It was in the 80s. He was on the Iran-Contra investigation.
Right. This was July 87. So you can't say that Cheney was making this case in response to what happened in 2001. Cheney was making this case 20 years ago.
Exactly. He was on that committee, and he was trying through Lee Hamilton, who's from my state of Indiana, trying to get everybody on the committee to agree with him.
Right.
They did not.
Yeah.
However, he issued his own opinion on it.
Right. In fact, the committee issued a report and kind of blasted Cheney for his position that president was above the law.
Mm-hmm.
And Cheney issued his own report.
Now we can see that's where we've gone.
That is where we've gone. And we see that in the president's use of the signing statement, in the use of the executive order. And in fact, that leads to our next story, in which has gotten no attention at all in the national press. This did surprise me. A federal judge struck down President Bush's authority, which was given to him by himself through Executive Order 13224, President Bush's authority to designate groups as terrorists. This executive order was issued on September 24th of 2001. Okay, just 2 weeks after 9/11.
Mm-hmm. I remember that when it came out.
It identified 27 groups and individuals as specially designated global terrorists And according to U.S. District Judge Audrey Collins, that executive order, parts of it anyway, were too vague, and that the order gives the president unfettered discretion, those are her words, to label groups without giving them a way to challenge those designations. Now, some of those groups were, in name anyway, charity organizations. Now, we know that there are charity organizations or, you know, that terrorist organizations that hide behind.
There are Christian so-called charity organizations that hide CIA assets.
Yes, exactly. Let's look at things for what they are.
Mm-hmm.
When you've got Pat Robertson using his own Operation Blessing planes to, ferry blood diamonds out of Africa.
That really steamed.
And CIA operatives
into Asia. I was
so
angry when I found that out.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff that's happened in Central America over the last 30 years, 40 years, that have involved allegedly Christian charities that were really...
God will repay.
Yes. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. But anyway, this surprised me because this is the first time I can remember a federal judge striking down parts of an executive order. I mean, the executive order has been used, especially by Bill Clinton and now by George W. Mm-hmm. Bush, as essentially the same way a king would issue a proclamation.
It is law.
Yeah.
And that's the way it works. Once he signs it, or she, mm-hmm. there's going to come a day when we've got a she doing that, the Congress has 30 days to take a look at it.
Yep.
It goes into the Thomas Register, and for 30 days, if no one complains, and no one ever does.
The Federal Register. Thomas Register is a listing, business listings and stuff.
Oh, no, Thomas, the Library of Congress?
Yeah.
Thomas Jefferson?
Yeah, the Thomas Register is a business listing, like a business encyclopedia of, different companies and businesses and stuff.
Okay, Thomas is also the name of the Library
Thomas
of Congress.
Is the website address
right.
for Thomas, yeah.
As in Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
That's what I was talking about.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, you're right, though. I think it is in the
Congressional Register, yeah. whatever it is.
Whatever, it's somewhere. But anyway, after
published.
30 days,
yeah.
if no one complains and no one ever does, it becomes law.
Mm-hmm.
This is nothing. It's interesting that this judge did that, that she did that, but what will happen is either it will go kicked up the chain to the Supreme Court and they'll say it's fine, or he'll just write another one saying paragraph so-and-so, subsection B,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it is amended to read.
Yeah. Or the next time Congress passes legislation that tries to curtail his power, he'll just issue a signing statement saying this is unconstitutional and I don't need to follow it.
Yeah.
While that's going on, we've got Newt Gingrich, who may be the Republican nominee in 2008, at a dinner honoring the First Amendment and those who stand up for the First Amendment.
And neutrality.
Yeah, net Newt. this took place in New Hampshire, interestingly enough. Manchester, New Hampshire, of course, is one of the places that you'll find a lot of potential candidates hanging out 2 years before the election.
Yeah, Manchester and Iowa.
Yeah. So Newt was there, and he said that we may need to clamp down on the use of free speech and the internet in order to reduce terrorists' ability to recruit and get out their message.
Mm-hmm. He is signaling that the internet, and we've seen it for a while now, the internet is going to be patrolled.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, regulated. It's already being patrolled.
Mm-hmm. And this is something we saw from Chertoff and FBI Director Mueller a couple of months back. We talked about that, where both of them said they're using the internet to recruit. We need to clamp down on that.
Well, I think that's true. I think they really are.
Well, that is true.
But throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Right. And as much as it galls me to agree with Keith Olbermann on anything political, he made a really good statement quoting or referencing Newt Gingrich's quote that we'll have to change the way we approach free speech before we lose a city. Those were his words. Raising the specter of a mushroom cloud being our first warning.
Mm-hmm.
Olbermann said, look, if you give away the right of Americans to enjoy free speech, you've already lost all the cities, bub.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it galls me to agree with Olbermann because he is a flaming liberal, but he's right about that. If we give up free speech in the name of security, then in what sense are we still a free nation?
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts. The Pope went to Turkey last week.
He did.
And
he did okay. I got to tell you, I was really worried about him.
Mm-hmm.
I was praying for the man. I don't agree with the whole idea of the papacy, but I do believe that the man, you know, deserves his prayers, and I pray for his salvation, among other things. But I was praying that he would have a safe trip. There were an awful lot of indicators that he might not get out of there alive, to be honest.
A lot of protests. And I talked with one analyst. He's a professor here at the university who is a specialist in Islam and Islamic history, more of a specialist in Africa, so I need to talk with him again. He's an interesting guy. But he said that it was his opinion that the protests were in part based on the traditional conflicts between Islam and Christianity, especially after the Pope made that speech earlier this summer where he quoted that Byzantine emperor and his comments about Muhammad. But they were just as much based on the anger that Turks feel at Pope Benedict's stance, you know, opposition to their admittance into the EU.
I think that had a lot to do with it. But I also think that the religious factor is probably bigger than he might envision because he's coming at this in a secularist manner, I should think. It's interesting to me that, oh gosh, it was on November the 27th, I think. It was 911 years to the day that the Crusades had been declared.
Yeah. Yeah, a very interesting date and very timely.
Against the Turks.
Yeah, that the Pope would be in Turkey at that point.
9-11, folks, 911 years. And it's 911 years all the next year.
Yep. And it only, and interestingly enough, it was 952 years, not quite to the day, but 952 years since the schism between the Eastern Church and the Roman Church.
Right, and that's supposedly one of the reasons he went there.
Yeah. Yeah, to try to make peace with the 1% of the Turks that are Christians.
I know.
Well,
I know.
Actually, the Eastern Orthodox Church encompasses a much wider area. You know, a good part of the Balkans, the Russian Orthodox Church still has ties with the Eastern Orthodox Church. And then those Christians that are still in Syria and Iraq, what few are left, you know, and through the Holy Land. So that was very interesting. And he did make some concessions. He did come out and say that he has now changed his position, would like to see Turkey admitted to the EU, which made the Turks, which warmed the reception that he received in Turkey.
I'd like to know what happened to him over the last month or so, because he was not saying that this summer and this fall.
No.
He was saying they should not be admitted.
Yeah, and so this was a change from even a couple months ago.
It
that
was,
did
and
change.
Not only that, but he went into a mosque and he prayed.
And he prayed and he faced
Mecca,
just like everybody else, which of course made everybody there feel like he was okay guy. What's really interesting, though, is that after the trip, coming out of the Vatican City was news that Henry Kissinger may sign on as a papal advisor.
Isn't that something?
Kissinger, who is as Bilderberg as you can get, is going to advise the Pope on matters political. What?
I know. Where'd that come from?
My goodness. Well, 83-year-old Henry Kissinger is still very active in political affairs.
And he's singing the Vatican rag.
Yeah. He was almost the guy who led the 9/11 commission, but there were some voices that really spoke up.
Oh gosh, you know what? George
when
Bush.
When that happened.
It just very quickly. It was in October or so of that year. It was very fast.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody went put on the brakes.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Crazy fast. So Kissinger didn't get that job, but he still got his very lucrative consulting business. He's at all of the Bilderberg Group meetings, and now he's going to have the ear of Pope Benedict the 16th, apparently, to advise him on where this Holy See should be involved in this world.
We are winding down to the last days, which reminds me, you and I watched a movie tonight that really it's a series of films we've talked about before, the prophecy movies. The early ones have Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken,
in them.
Right.
These two had, what was his name?
Well, let's see. Kari Wirt played the female lead. The male lead.
I can't think of his name offhand.
John London, I think, was the guy who played.
The guy who was Pinhead is
Yeah.
He's in one of them.
The Hellraiser movies. Yeah, we watch a whole lot of different stuff.
We haven't had any coffee for 3 days. But it's really interesting because it takes an inside look at the war between the angels. And I don't mean just the fallen and the unfallen. I mean the war among the fallen angels. You and I have talked about that many times. And the whole notion that the Table of Nations plays out a risk game. And it's the fallen angels moving the pieces.
Right. And this just shows the brilliance of God in the aftermath of the Tower of Babel incident, where God divided the nations up. And if you read Genesis 10, you'll see that there were 70. And, of course, according to Deuteronomy 38.
We see 70 or 72, depending
on. Yeah. You got the number of the nations was equal to the number of the sons of God, you know, the B'nai Elohim. So God placed the 70 in charge of the 70 nations. But he knew when he did that, that their pride, the pride of these fallen Elohim, would pit them one against another.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that we kind of saw portrayed in these mm-hmm. movies tonight.
Yeah, we were watching that, and I suddenly turned to Derek and I said, oh, this is going to sound really stupid, but God is brilliant.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened. But then, of course, you know, God called out his own people. And again, as we've said before, one thing that we Christians should not mistake is the modern political entity called Israel for God's chosen people.
Exactly. It's not that way today. It was not that way in, you know, biblical times.
Right.
In the Old Testament and in the New Testament, you take a look at the leaders of Israel, and they were not the most godly people.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't following the rules.
No, no.
They were following man's rules, and in fact, they wanted to be the rulers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting. We've talked about this as well. I mean, even the disciples, up until the very last second, that's what they thought, too. They thought they were going to get to rule along with Jesus in his earthly kingdom right then and there.
That's right. Even in Acts chapter 1, which is Jesus' last appearance in the New Testament, the last question mm-hmm. that the disciples threw at him was, okay, you're going to restore the kingdom to Israel now. They were looking for a political situation, mm-hmm. a political solution, and sadly, many in this world, Jews and Christians are looking at the same thing.
Why, that's
sort
of like dominionism.
Ding, 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 ding. You're a winner. Well, we thank you for hanging with us for this hour. We've got some interesting interviews coming up over the next few weeks. Don't want to make any promises yet, but we are going to have some interesting guests that we'll be talking with.
Well, I don't know that I'm going to give anything away, in an unrelated, for now, event, we do have a new contributing writer on Watcher Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Marvin has graciously agreed to help us out with Watcher Magazine with his insights and his recollection of events that he was personally involved in. This is firsthand knowledge.
Right. Things that took place in Vietnam that he says are being repeated today.
Mm-hmm.
Soldiers being treated as expendable by mm-hmm. the political elite in Washington, D.C., which is unconscionable. But there's more to it than that. You might have seen Lieutenant Colonel Marvin in an episode on the History Channel of The Men Who Killed Kennedy.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he was on there. In fact, if you remember the segment where a gentleman was being asked about a doctor in Washington who
Lieutenant
apparently
Commander
had original photographs of the autopsy. And,
right.
And this gentleman was asked, was saying that he had been asked to, frankly, assassinate this doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw the man's eyes filled with tears. That was Lieutenant Colonel Dan Marvin.
Yep.
He chose not to fulfill his assignment. He did not assassinate this doctor. But, well, according to what Lieutenant Marvin said, somebody else did.
Yeah, Lieutenant Commander Pitzer was declared dead of a suicide, which often happens to people who are possessing inconvenient information.
Spies.
Yeah, we've gone full circle today. How about that?
Spies are us.
Yep. Well, we appreciate you listening, whether it's on the podcast or on Remnant Radio or Global Public Radio. We'll be back again next week with another hour of theo-crypto-geopolitical analysis.
That's right. Tomorrow night, I'm going to be talking with Taylor Kent, and I think I'm going to be appearing on one of his podcasts coming up here soon.
Cool.
I don't know if it's live or a Memorex that we're doing tomorrow night. In the meanwhile, if you want to send us a note, you can do that at radio@peeringintodarkness.com, or you can send us private notes. If you want to tell Derek he's just cute as a button, send it to Derek@peeringintodarkness.com. And if you want to tell me that I'm crazy as a loon, send it to Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com.
Beautiful and brilliant.
But crazy
and of course,
as a loon.
And the forum is always open for your contributions. Peeringintodarkness.com/forum.
Until, and if you have coffee, send it to us in a mail.
Yeah, until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye bye.
TID Radio.